It's we have Matthew Osborne, who's part of the ASP.NET team, talking about NuGet. So I hope we get to learn a little more about some of the cool features it has. So take it away, Matt.
First off, it has no cool features. So no, I'm just kidding. It has a lot of cool features. Okay, so let's go ahead and get started. Let's just go ahead and jump into the slides. I promise I don't have too many slides, and at least they look halfway decent, so you guys don't have to stare at some ugly slides the whole time. And we'll get plenty of code here. So first off, as mentioned, I am Matthew Osborne. I work on the ASP.NET team. Well, technically, I work on the Azure Applications and Platform team. That's basically everything that's underneath Scott Guthrie. So if it's underneath Scott Guthrie and it has angle brackets, I've probably done something with it in my 4 years at Microsoft. I've been here 4 years. I just had my anniversary in June. I've worked on everything from MVC. I saw MVC 2, 3, and a little bit of 4. I worked on ASP.NET Web Pages 1 and 2. I worked a little bit on web forms in the very beginning of my career. I've also worked on NuGet. That's particularly why I'm giving this talk. It's something that's very near and dear to my heart. And then currently I also work on the Azure portal. So if you've seen our new HTML5 single page application version of the portal that has been released in preview, you saw it in Guthrie's demo today during the keynote. I worked on a lot of those features, and that's kind of currently what I'm working on right now. Okay, let's go ahead and get started. So you're in the NuGet Ad Reference Awesome Talk. There is a Q&A tab at the top. So if you have questions throughout the talk, I'm pretty familiar with this talk, so you're not going to throw me off. I'd love to be able to answer as many questions as possible and get as many people using NuGet and understanding NuGet by the time the talk is done. So please don't hesitate to ask any questions. If I don't see it, just keep asking a question. I'll eventually notice the QA bar at the top. So first off, we didn't just develop a solution to something with no problem, right? We saw a problem. And the problem here, and this is purely selfish, and it came from the ASP.NET team, is a lot of us had our own projects that we were working on, or even internally we were working on projects, and we saw that development really wasn't fun anymore. And so what do I mean by that? Well, there's a couple components to that. One is that reusing code was basically very difficult and time consuming, right? So, we would sit there and write a helper to give us MD5 hash of an email so we could use Gravatar about 400 times. I mean, I've done that so many times I couldn't even count, right? It wasn't necessarily that I was writing it every time. It was that I had a library and I'd open it up, copy the code out, paste it into the whatever application I was working on at the time, right? It really was rather difficult and time consuming to kind of take these pieces of code and reuse them. Even, when you start talking about deployment mechanisms such as DLLs, well, everyone's heard of DLL hell. Then what happens when you're dealing with things that aren't even DLL? Maybe JavaScript files, maybe images, maybe CSS styles, those types of things. So one of the reasons why that really makes it difficult to reuse and share code is that there's too many places to find these libraries. So let's take a step to the side and say, I'm not the one writing the library, but I know somebody out there has probably written a Gravatar helper, or somebody out there has probably written an email validation helper, or take your pick of what helper you want to use as the example. Somebody has probably done this before. So there's too many places to find these libraries. So you would come in, and where did you go? Okay, well, maybe you went to Google, or maybe you Googled with Bing, and you ended up finding what you're looking for, and then you ended up maybe being put on someplace like Codeplex or SourceForge or Google Code or GitHub, right? There's all these different kinds of places that you could find these libraries. So maybe you didn't know where to start with, but there was no kind of single place to get these, right? So then once you arrived at these places, there was really no unified way to share code. You could say, hey, isn't that what a DLL is supposed to do? But that's only for a certain amount of code. that's not the whole spectrum of things that you could do. There's no C sharp. That's for C sharp. That's not for style sheets. That's not for scripts. That's not for anything like that, right? So that's really there was no unified way to kind of, you know, share these things across, right? So maybe you would show up to the website, and maybe eventually you would either be given a zip file that you would download and extract and add to your lib folder and add references and then copy your script files in and everything you needed. Maybe you were given nothing. Maybe you were just given source and it was purely a project that you downloaded. You had to build it yourself. You had to add references, that type of thing. That's like a worst case scenario way of sharing code. You know, maybe even, maybe actually another step further might be you just found somebody's blog and copied and pasted the code into your project, right? That's how you chose to share, right? Everyone's copied and pasted code from a blog to try to get something working before. Everyone has done that. That's kind of the problem that we realized. And we said, okay, well, how do we make development fun again? What can we do to kind of reduce some of these pain points that we're seeing? And in our opinion, these were one of the biggest pain points that we were running into when we were developing applications. So what can we do? And we came up with any good approach, a three-pronged approach. First off, we said we needed to make code reuse easy. That's number one. The simplest, you know, that's the main goal, which is to make that reuse easy. The second part to that is we had to create an ecosystem around it, because if you come up with this great solution, but there's no ecosystem, nobody's going to know about the solution, no one's going to use the solution. So we had to make an ecosystem. And then, so once we had those two, we kind of looked at it and said, okay, well, we want to create an ecosystem. What are some traits that good ecosystems have? And the other part that we came up with was we need to make it extensible. So we need to take all of this stuff, we need to make the solution and the ecosystem extensible. We need to come up with a way so people can do things with our ecosystem and with our code that we didn't even think was possible, right? That's very, very, very important to us because number one, we can outsource to the community and say, why don't, you know, maybe you can extend it. But number two, just because, you know, we're not going to come up with all the cool ideas. That's plain and simple. We're not going to come up with, you know, the crazy stuff. You guys, the community and the ecosystem is going to come up with the crazy stuff and they're going to be the ones to extend it. So that's kind of the three approaches that we decided to take to try to fix this problem that development wasn't fun again. So let's go ahead and first off, the solution was NuGet, as you probably know since you're in this talk. The solution was NuGet. It's pronounced NuGet, not NuGet, not NuGet, not Nugget. We get a lot. For the English majors, there's some phonetic something or other underneath of it. I don't know what it is. It's all Greek to me. I'm horrible in English. But it's NuGet, and the name came about through a combination of combining some projects, but we kind of tossed around some names, and originally it was going to be called NuPack. So if you've kind of heard of NuPack before, or you might have seen some mentionings maybe searching around on the web for NuPack, that's the old name for NuGet before released 1.0. Also, I'd like to take this time to say that a lot of NuGet demos end up being about websites, right? So a lot of stuff we do tends to be very web focused, and I just want to point out before we get any further in this talk that NuGet is not just for websites, and hopefully you'll see that today. I tried to make my examples a little bit more diverse from websites, but it just typically tends to go that way because everyone that works on the NuGet team is typically came from the ASP.NET team, so we're very familiar with the web, so we're kind of that's kind of our comfort zone, so we tend to think of scenarios around that. But it doesn't mean that you can't use it for anything else. In fact, we'll show you how to use it with things like console libraries today. So it can be used with anything, just to make that clear. So the first part is, how do we make code reuse easy? So I want to take a quick second here and show you what it was like prior to NuGet. So in this particular scenario, I'm going to Google with Bing for Elma. And Elma is error logging module and handler. It's basically a nice error logging tool for ASP.NET, right? So I'm kind of already skipping ahead in the slides here, knowing that the fact I needed to have this particular tool, this name of something, right? I may have previously done a search for something like ASP.NET error logging. and found out, hey, this Alma thing is the thing I need. And then I came to this point. Eventually, you know, you kind of find, hey, this thing's hosted on Google Code. What do I need to do? I'm presented with this page. I get here, and there is just a ton of links. I mean, that's the first thing that stands out to me is there's links everywhere. I have no idea what I'm supposed to click on. They all basically look the same. There's a little green box that kind of draws my attention. So maybe over there is something that I want to go ahead and download. This little deck of screenshots has probably been shown about 400 times. So I don't really want to bore you because I'd rather spend more time diving into the code and showing you how to use NuGet. But basically, all you really need to know is that through this whole process, I've gone and you know maybe there's 15, 20 more steps between now and this, which is basically getting Alma working. So there's a lot of stuff in between, but I'd rather just take the time since we have NuGet now and NuGet's a big deal. I'm not going to tell you what it was like before. You don't need to worry about what it was like before. You just need to know that it was painful. So that gets us to our first demo of the day. So I have Visual Studio 2012 here, and this is running the Alma demo solution. This is nothing fancy. It's just an MVC4 application that I've already created prior to this talk. There's really nothing special about it at all. It's file new project. I just didn't want to have to sit here and wait for a file new project to be created. And then also I wanted to call out that my demos today are going to be using 2012, but this is also available in Visual Studio 2010. There's nothing specific about 2012, so the same version of NuGet is available, which leads me nicely into my next point, which is what is NuGet? So NuGet is an extension inside of Visual Studio. So if you go to the Extensions and Updates tab, you'll see that I have NuGet Package Manager here. If you have Visual Studio 2012, NuGet ships in the box. You're guaranteed to have it installed. In fact, it's actually required for things like MVC3 Tools Update and MVC4. So if you're in Visual Studio 2010, you may or may not have it. But if you've installed MVC3 Tools Update, you've already got it installed. And if you're running Visual Studio 2010, you've already installed it. It comes installed out of the box. And we'll talk a little bit more about why that is later in this talk. I should mention it's completely and utterly free. We give it away, so you don't have to pay anything there. Okay, so I'm just going to go ahead and I'm going to right-click, and I'm going to launch the NuGet Package Manager UI. So I right-click, said Manage NuGet Packages. This opens a nice UI. It looks very familiar if you're familiar with the extensions gallery. It's basically using the same UI. In this particular case, what I'd like to do is I'm going to switch feeds here, and I'm actually going to install Alma. So I'm going to search for Alma. I've got it right here. So there's this Alma, this alma.contrib.mvc, there's Alma core library. There's kind of a lot of stuff. So I'm just going to go ahead and actually install right here. So I'm going to install this. And if you notice, it went ahead and installed both of these. That's because Alma has a dependency right here calling out that it has a dependency on Alma core. And this is kind of a nice way that packages can be broken up into smaller bits and can be distributed such that you only get the bits that you need. And this is also very important because it points out the fact that NuGet resolves these types of dependencies. So many packages can depend on other packages. And we do all the hard work for you, particularly around finding out versions and those types of things. You know, what version of what package you need to get up and running. That's something we do really well, and we're very proud of that. Okay, so I've got NuGet, I've got Alma installed, and you can see here I had the web.config open. And I'm getting prompted by Visual Studio saying, hey, this file changed, do you want to reload it? And that's because Alma actually came in here and ran some transformations for me on my web config to go ahead and set everything up so I didn't have to learn any of this, right? So this is basically ready to go. I could completely run this site, cause some errors, get error logging. For the sake of time, I'm not going to do it. I hope that you just trust me. You can try this demo out yourself, but that's really all it takes. So what actually did it do besides just run this transform on this file? Well, it obviously added the reference that we needed to Alma. Okay, so where do these references come from? If I go ahead and open this folder, so I'm in the project level. I'm going to go one up to the solution level. There is this packages folder, and you can see right here I have Alma right here. Right? And if I go ahead and click on this, right, so this is the NuGet package right here. And this actually gets unfolded. So we keep a version of the NuGet, the new PKG file is a NuGet package. We keep a version of that around completely untouched in case we need to look at it for at any point in time to see what actually happened. But then we've actually unfolded everything else that needed to happen. In this particular case, we've run this web.config.transform, and this is just using the Visual Studio Transform feature. So if I go ahead and drag this over here, you can see that this is basically just the web config bits that I wanted to go ahead and add. And this transform feature is not specific to us. It's a feature of Visual Studio. We just took advantage of it to allow these types of things to happen. The other thing that I'd like to show you is, so any DLLs that you have, so in this particular case, the Alma core library is the one with the DLL, and here's that DLL. The references are actually added from this packages folder. So you can think of packages as your lib folder, if you will, right? Quite commonly, you would end up having a lib or a third-party folder, and you'd add all your DLLs in there and add references to that file location. You wouldn't actually drop them into your bin folder, right? You want to be able to delete the bin folder. So you can think of packages as the lib folder, right? So the hint pass actually point to this DLL right here that's been unfolded. But what I could do, just to show you, this is something that a lot of people don't necessarily know. I can actually right-click, I'm going to rename this, and I'm going to rename this to .zip. And I can actually just open this up. Use the zip package format to actually be able to package all these things up. So I can actually come into here and view the original package content. So there's a lot of stuff that's the cruf related to packaging things up. But you can see if I just dive down into the lib, that's actually where the DLL comes from. So let me get back out of this. And I'm actually going to just rename this back so I don't break anything. Make that a new package. Okay. So now that I've got a package installed, I want to do something more exciting, right? So maybe there's updates, right? So now that I've got some tools onto my bot, or some code onto my bots, how do I know if that code's ever updated, right? So maybe there's a security fix, maybe something changed, maybe the code's updated. How do I know that? Well, previously you used to have to do that yourself. Maybe you would run into an error, and then you would, you know, do a search on the web for that error, and then eventually you'd find, you know, a blog post that was outdated saying, hey, I've updated to this version, you need to go update. You went and tried to update the library that you're using, and then all of a sudden, you know, you're actually like six versions behind, nothing's compatible, you have to rewrite your whole site. That's kind of annoying. So we provide an update mechanism. So if I go ahead and right-click and I'm going to say Manage NuGet Packages, you know that there is an update tab right here. And I can actually say that I am just going to update jQuery right now. So I can say update, and what this is going to do is figure out, you can see that it's updating jQuery from 1.6.2 to 1.7.2. And it's going to say that this is updated now, right? That was plain and simple. Okay. More importantly, if this had any dependencies and the dependencies needed to be updated as well, it would do the whole dependency tree and get everything up to date and get everything working for you. Right? So this is a kind of a great way to help you get started. So the next piece I'm going to show you is the NuGet Package Manager console. So this is this also ships with NuGet. It's part of the NuGet extension. So what I've been showing you is the GUI interface, if you will. This is the command line tool, and we all know that command line tools are way better than any GUI. So this is the Package Manager console, and what this actually is I want to stress this point because not enough people realize this. This is PowerShell, right? So I can type git security. What is it? Well, you can get the idea. I'm seeing all kinds of PowerShell information, right? This is PowerShell inside of Visual Studio. It's PowerShell running in the context of Visual Studio. And what I mean by the context of Visual Studio is I can type $.dte, which stands for Design Time Environment. This is how extensions communicate to Visual Studio. So I can type $.dte, press enter, and we're going to spit out information about the project system, right? So we've set up everything so that you have access to Visual Studio from PowerShell, and particularly access to Visual Studio and the project that, and solution that you're working with, right? But we've also added some of our own extensions. So we have install package, right? And then, so that's one. You can see how we've added tab and completion for all these, but I'm going to say update. I want to update package. I could give it a specific package to look for updates, and then that's what it's going to do. It's going to see if there's an update for jQuery and install it. But what I do is, if I don't want to do each one, is I can just say update package. This might actually take a while because the internet's been a little slow. But basically what this is going to do is it's going to look for all the packages that I have installed across all the projects in this solution and go and update, right? So I just want you to stop and think of how much time this is going to save you. Think about if you were previously doing this in your company, maybe you were the guy that was tasked with updating the new versions of jQuery and jQuery UI and making sure everything matched. You'd have to go online, you'd have to figure out what version of jQuery UI worked with what version of jQuery, what DLLs you needed, what helpers you needed. And you'd actually have to go through here and update all these manually by yourself. And more importantly, what happens if there's a new version of jQuery, but there's not a new version of jQuery UI that works? Well, we're smarter than that, and we say, hey, if you have jQuery UI and there's not a version of jQuery UI that works with your newest jQuery, we won't upgrade everything. So we figure all that kind of stuff out and always keep you in a very good working state. While this is still going, so this should be done here in just a second. Do we have any questions so far? I'm going relatively quickly just because I have a lot of stuff that I'd like to cover. Okay, so it sounds like there's no questions and we're done. So now I'm up and ready to go with the latest version. So this is basically what you need. I've used NuGet, I've updated packages, I found packages, now you're going. The next thing I'd like to show you here is a feature we call Package Restore. And this is a feature that we introduced in NuGet 1.6. The cool part about NuGet is it's what we call an out-of-band product. So we don't ship it in alignment with Visual Studio. We can ship it whenever we want. So whenever we have a new version or a new set of features that we'd like to release, we can go ahead and release a new version. And this is a feature we released some time ago, NuGet 1.6. We're actually on NuGet 2 is what is going to ship with Visual Studio 2012. So Package Restore. So if you notice here, if I'm going to open this up in Explorer, you notice this packages folder is relatively large. So if I do it, it's 22 megabytes, and the actual code that I particularly own or that I've wrote is 6 megabytes. Right? So that's kind of a big difference, and actually that's going to end up being smaller because I have a bin folder here. So if I was to delete the bin folder here, you know, this is going to end up being significantly smaller, right? So 1 3/4 megabytes versus 22 megabytes, right? So in source control, one of the common best practices is that you only want to check in things that you're responsible for. You don't want to have to keep versions around of somebody else's code, right? You only want to version your code. And it makes it a lot easier for your people to pull down your repositories, build your repositories, right? So you don't want to have to check in all this other people's code into your source control, right? You're not working with the other people's code, so why does it matter to you? So I'm actually going to go in here, and I'm going to right-click on the solution. This is a solution-level feature. And you can see right under Manage NuGet Package, there's Enable NuGet Package Restore. And I'm going to say yes, I accept this. No. And this is going to take a second. And what this is going to do is it's going to drop a folder in to my solution with a couple files, particularly the NuGet.exe, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But that's our NuGet command line interface, and this NuGet targets file. What this NuGet targets file is it contains some targets that are going to run on build, right, for you. And we kind of wire everything up for you. This is using MS build. So what this means I can do is I can come into my demo here, I can go into my packages, and I can delete every single one of these packages, right? And you saw that I deleted the bin folder, so there's no tricks here. There's no bin folder. I'm going to go ahead and actually build this. And if I alt-tab back over to here, while this is building, you can see that as I'm building, packages are actually being downloaded and placed into this packages folder for me, and then everything builds just fine. You know, I get back my bin folder and all my references are copied over as I need. Right? So what this feature allows you to do is go ahead and not have to worry about checking in this large substantial sum of third-party code and only worry about checking in your code. And how we know what to install is if you look inside your project. So what you do need to check in is the .NuGet folder. That's all the things that kind of glue all the pieces together. And then you do need to check in this packages.config. And this is each one of your projects that has packages will have a packages.config. So you want to go ahead and check those in. And this basically tells us what package to install and what version to install. Okay? So this is pretty simple. It's a lot easier than checking in your whole third-party directory. Okay, no questions so far, so we're doing good. Let's go ahead and close this down and head back over to the slides. Okay, so we showed you kind of a quick overview of how to use NuGet. We went very quickly. And I think that solution is a very good solution to how we make code reuse easy. You saw how I was easily able to pull down a bunch of code, install these packages, and not really have to know much about how the code works to get the benefit from it, right? I didn't have to spend a whole lot of time setting it up. I got to spend more time doing the thing that I'm concerned about, which is writing my code that solves my problems, not trying to figure out somebody else's code. So that's how we made code reuse easy. The second part is we needed to create an ecosystem around the code, or around our solution, which is NuGet. So these numbers are a little outdated, but it's kind of hard to keep track of all the numbers. So NuGet's been around for about a year and a half, give or take a little bit, right? In that time, we've had almost 5,000 unique packages being added to NuGet. And what I mean by unique is jQuery 1 and jQuery 2 and jQuery 3, those only count as one unique, right? So it's you can kind of think of it as projects. There's been 4,792 projects added in the first year and a half of NuGet's life. And that equates, if you do the math, that's almost 10 new projects being added to NuGet every day. So we've had significant adoption there around the ecosystem. And then the second part is the packages being downloaded. I don't know if you saw that. I worked really hard on this animation here. If I go ahead and press it, you can see a nice little download animation there. But in the first year and a half, we've had 5 million packages downloaded, right? So this number is actually significantly higher. Well, first off, 5 million packages is about 8,000 packages being downloaded every day. That's a lot of people using your code if you put your code out there on NuGet. But like I said, this number is actually significantly higher because we do significant caching on the client side. You actually have a cache of packages that is on your machine, so we don't have to hit our servers every time because we're already at 8,000 downloads every day. You know, and these are some big packages. So we cache a lot on our client side. And that doesn't even include things like pre-installed NuGet packages, so packages that already come with NuGet. And we'll talk about how those come into play later in this talk as well. So, you know, you can see by these numbers just the sheer size of the ecosystem already. We've really helped people get their stuff on there, and the ecosystem's there. So we're really trying to build the ecosystem, and we think we've kind of got it to a critical mass, and I hope it's kind of snowballing and getting out of control, one might say, which is all kinds of awesome stuff in NuGet, such that now when I need a library, I don't go and search for it on Bing anymore. I actually just immediately go to NuGet and try to type in the phrase that I'm looking for and see if that library is actually already there. So with that, we're going to dive into the demo around the ecosystem. And the first thing you should know is what do I mean by the ecosystem? Well, that's kind of where all of our packages are. And I have open here is NuGet.org. This is our main site. From NuGet.org, this is basically where we host all the packages. So this is where you download packages from, right? You can see some stats. We're already way past the total downloads that I had for the year and a half. We're Wow, we're way up there. And then we're way up there for unique packages. So looks like I'm going to have to update those numbers. You can click on packages here in the packages tab, and you can actually see all the packages that we have installed. Or not installed. You can see all the packages that are on the gallery. So these are all ones that would be available for you to download. And I can go ahead and click on jQuery just to kind of get an idea. So you can see how many downloads it has, how many downloads it has for the version, when's the last time it was updated, who's the owner, those types of things. And then also actually view the project site, so you can link over that. But what this site does is just give you an overview. It gives you some more information. All this information can also be found inside of Visual Studio, so you never have to leave. You don't have to come download the packages from here. In fact, if you click on how to download, we tell you, hey, just use NuGet. You don't actually need to download anything from the web. NuGet will do everything for you. So I'm going to go ahead and minimize that. So that's great, but how did all of these packages get where they are, right? So we need to talk a little bit about package authoring. So that's the next one I'm gonna talk about here. So let me just open up this. Okay, so this is a solution that I have. It's nothing fancy. I just have a class library here and then a console application that's consuming that or is going to consume that class library. So the first thing I want to do is I think I'm going to write a helper. And I've got some code here. Just so you don't have to watch me type it all. I'll just copy that. And this helper that I want to write allows me to parse Markdown. And for those that didn't know, Markdown is just a way to annotate regular plain old text such that it can easily be transformed into HTML. If you've ever used Stack Overflow commenting system or anything like that, you've probably used Markdown before. So I'm going to go ahead and in this project, I'm going to manage NuGet packages. Actually, I want the online. I'm going to come into here, and I'm going to search for Markdown. Okay. So I'm going to install this Markdown Sharp open source C# implementation of a Markdown process. About what I want, I'm going to go ahead and install that into my project. Close that, and I'm going to paste in the code that I had here. So what I have here is a helpers class. It's just a static class, and I'm going to take in a string, and I'm going to convert some Markdown, right? Pretty simple. You don't really need to worry about this. This is just taking Markdown and running it through a transform. Right? Go ahead and build. Everything's fine. So the last thing I want to do before I go ahead and package up this source is I want to edit the assembly information. And this is kind of how the assembly is identified. So the assembly title I'm going to call ASPConf. The description is I'm going to put something like, this is a demo, do not install, and you'll see why in a minute. But it's amazing, no matter how many times I give demos and say do not install, inevitably I go and look at the packages and somebody has installed them. I get about 100 downloads every time. So I'm just going to leave all this stuff for now. I don't particularly need anything to do with this. And I'm pretty confident that this is going to work. So I'm just going to say that we're 1.0 quality. Right? So run this. I've got my build. Okay, so now how do I create a NuGet package? Well, there's several ways to create a NuGet package. The easiest way is to download a tool called NuGet.exe. And you saw this before. And this was our NuGet command line. It's available itself as a NuGet package that we can drop into things. Or you can just go to nuget.codeplex.com, and it's available. It's a one-time download. So if you download it once, you can then type NuGet.exe update, and you pass the self parameter to it. And this will actually check and see if there's a new version of the NuGet.exe. So really, it is a one-time download. And this is something that I just have downloaded on every one of my machines. It's sitting in my tools folder and it's always added to my path, so I always have it. So you can see here in PowerShell, I've already went ahead and navigated to the folder where this solution's at, just to save some time. So I'm going to say NuGet pack, and this tells the command line interface that I want to create a NuGet package. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to pass a CS proj file to it. So I'm going to say this is the project that I want you to build. And you can see here what it's saying is it found a packages config. So it's packaging these files that are in debug. It found a packages config. It said I didn't specify an author. And so it's just using my currently logged in user, and it's went ahead and created it. So if I actually open up this folder here, you can see that I now have this aspconf 1.0.0.0 NuGet package. If I just go ahead and double click this, you can see how I've got, you know, an icon here. I can go ahead and double click this. This icon is given to you when you install the NuGet Package Explorer. And this is actually a tool that one of the guys on our team wrote. Something we don't ship, but it's a click once installer that you can download and install. The link's on our CodePlex site, which is nuget.codeplex.com. And you can just go ahead and install this. And it gives you a nice user interface to kind of explore packages. If you're never going to create a package, you don't need to worry about this tool. This is really just for helping you create packages. And you can see here that it's given me an ID, it's chosen the version that I gave it, it picked out some stuff for me, it said I don't need to require the a license. Here, it grabbed the description out of the assembly. And most importantly, it actually took the, it recognized that I had NuGet packages installed, and instead of just blindly copying those into this lib folder, it actually realized, hey, I only need this ASP.conf DLL. The rest of them I can get from NuGet. So I went ahead and set up the dependencies here for me, so I don't have to worry about anything like that. So I've gone ahead and got this package. So this is my first package. It's great and awesome. Now I need to go ahead and share it with the world. So I'm probably going to want to go ahead and put it on NuGet Gallery. So I'm going to come to the NuGet Gallery, and I'm going to go ahead and log in. I have an account here that I use. And I will tell you, if you don't plan on creating any NuGet packages, you don't need to create an account on the NuGet Gallery to use NuGet. It's only if you want to host your packages on the NuGet Gallery that you need to create it. So in here, if I go on to my account and click on it, you'll see here that I'm provided with an API key. Right? This API key, if I was to click this to show the API key, you'd see a nice API key in the regenerate button. I'm not going to do that. Since this video is being recorded, I don't want to have to regenerate it after. But basically, I would copy and paste this key in. It's a very long key. It's like a password. You should keep it secret. And it's a very long key, but what I have in the NuGet XE is there's a set API key. Oh, that's totally not what I wanted to think about that. Yep. So there's a set API key, and you can see that it takes in the API key. And this will actually use your Windows credential store to go ahead and store your key encrypted so you don't have to remember it all the time. Right? So that's super handy. So let me go ahead and clear the screen here. So then once I have that, I can say NuGet push, and I'm going to give it my package. Right? So I'm going to go ahead and push this NuGet package up. And if the demo gods are kind with me and the internet's... Oh, I set my API key to something wrong. So I did that on accident. It does look like I'm going to have to end up regenerating a new API key after this video. So I'm going to go ahead and copy this and just scroll up. And so I'm going to NuGet set API key and pass in key here. NuGet push. Now I should be able to push my back. Okay, so my NuGet package is now available up on the main feed. So I'm going to come into my creating packages. And okay, so I've got this demo here. So I want to go ahead and consume this. So I'm going to say manage NuGet packages. Actually, you know what? I told you the command line interface is cooler, but I haven't been using it. So I'm going to use that. So I'm going to come into the command line interface. I'm going to make sure my project is the right one, is the demo. And I'm going to say install package. Perhaps, if I spell it correctly, I'll get tab completion. Install package ASP.conf. Right, and you can see that I got tab completion with this. I just pressed tab. I got tab completion. So we're pulling from the live feed to get tab completion for package names when you install. So that's something that's quite handy and pretty cool. So I'm going to go ahead and install this package. And you can see here that it figured out, hey, I need to resolve the dependency of Markdown, and it went ahead and installed Markdown before it installed ASP.NET. or this ASPConf. So inside of here, I can do something as simple as console.writeLine, and I am going to say helper. Actually, what did I call it? Helpers. Helpers. Dot convert markdown, and I'm just going to manually pass something in for now. For those that didn't know, passing this just means to use an H1 tag, hello world. Right? So if I go ahead and run this, you can see that it's converted that into HTML and printed it out for me. Right? So that's super easy. That's as easy as it takes to actually get your package out there onto the feed and be able to share your code with people. So the next thing I want to do is, let's say that I wanted to update this class library. So I've got this, this convert markdown thing is cool, but I want to make what I deem as a breaking change. So I'm going to make a breaking change. I'm going to no longer pass you back markdown. I'm just always going to return the same thing. This is a breaking change. So how do I share this with people without breaking anything? Right? So this is where semantic versioning comes into play. NuGet follows a scheme called SimVer, and you can actually read more about it. I have it open right here at simver.org. We follow this semantic versioning spec, if you will. And this defines some rules for how you version assemblies based on whether it's a breaking change, and more importantly, also how you could take a breaking change and then you might be able to give it as a beta test, right? So how to define things as being, you know, beta or pre-release software so that you could test it, how you define, you know, what a major or minor number means, all those things. So you can see here it's major, minor, patch. And this is a full spec, and we use this spec for how we deal with versions. So because I want to make this a breaking change, I'd want to change this to be 2.0. So I'm going to go ahead and include this as 2.0. But before I do anything else, actually, what I want to do is I want to release this, but I want to release it as alpha software. So I want somebody to be able to test it and see if this breaking change that I made actually screws up more than what I intended it to. Right, so I want to actually name this something differently. And following the semantic versioning spec, I want to name it something like 2.0.0-alpha, right? Because I want to release it as an alpha. Now, the problem with doing this is that assembly versions are strongly tied to a type in .NET, right? So we couldn't just ask the .NET folks to redo their versioning at this point. It's just not going to happen. But what we could do is, so we actually use, so if I do assembly colon assembly, and then there's assembly information version. What we'll do is assembly information version is just a string. Right? So I can actually put this in there. Right? And what NuGet will do is understand that .NET assemblies can't be versioned this way, but they can have this attribute, and we can look at this attribute to help us out with semantic versioning rather than just looking at these two. So if this is present, we'll always choose this one over these. Right? So this is what I'm going to do. I've updated this to basically say semantically that this is a breaking change and that I want this to be a pre-release. So I'm going to go back, make sure this is built so I have everything good to go. I'm going to go back and I'm going to say NuGet pack. And I'm going to go ahead and pass in my CS proj here. Right? And if I view this, you can see that I've created this new ASPConf NuGet DLL here. So I'm going to go ahead and push that one as well. To the feed. Okay, so it's available. So in theory, I should be able to just come over here inside my consumer package, so the thing that's actually using this. And if I go ahead and clear everything out, I should be able to say update package ASP.conf. Right, so what in the world just happened? You just saw that I pushed a new package up, but it's saying, hey, there's not an update of this package available. Right? So what does that mean? Well, what that means is that we're protecting it. So we understand that that new version is a pre-released version. And we will never update you to a pre-released version of a package without you explicitly telling us. Right? So you can never get in a bad state. You can never get where you've accidentally installed pre-release software on your computer. You always have to physically tell us. And that goes as far as meaning that no released package can depend on a pre-released package, right? So you can't accidentally get in a state where you have unstable software. But what you could do is you could say update package, I'm going to give it ASP.conf, and I'm going to pass in pre. And this means go ahead, this is the explicit action that says go ahead and use pre-release software. Right? So then if I was to go ahead and run this, you can see that I'm now returning the breaking change. Right? So this is a little bit about pre-release software. Do I have any questions though so far? I've been going pretty quick, and apparently everyone's been following. Okay, perfect. Okay, so on to the next demo. So the next demo I'm going to talk about here is satellite assemblies. Many of you might be aware of what satellite assemblies are. Some of you have probably never even heard of them. What satellite assemblies are is basically a way to package up your resource strings into a DLL and include them separately. So you don't have to build a version of your DLL for every language. So you create one language DLL, and then you have these satellite assemblies that contain nothing more than resource strings. And .NET will recognize these satellite assemblies and choose resources out of them rather than out of the main DLL. Right? It's a good story for localization. So in NuGet 1.8, which is relatively new, we added support for satellite assemblies. Right? And we did this so you can actually localize a package. So I have a demo right here. So I'm going to go ahead, and the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to install our NuGet package. I'm going to come into here. And so I have this satellite demo. I'm going to go ahead and install this package. Okay. And then I'm going to copy some code that I have from over here. This is, I'm going to have to resolve some references here. Oops. Apparently that copied onto the wrong line there. I don't know what happened there. Okay. So you can see here, except I'm going to need to change this namespace just so it works. I forgot that I named them the same, but it's not going to work. Okay. So you can see here that basically what I'm doing is I'm calling this helper, which there's a helper inside of the package that I installed, and that's what gave me this. But then I'm calling it once, and then I'm calling the I'm switching the current UI culture to the Japanese culture, right? So this might be, you can think about this, your machine is just going to do this if you're running in Japanese Windows, right? But this is a good example. So right now, it's because I have this project named the same thing. I need to rename this project. I've done this about 400 times where I've named the project the same thing, and it never works. Okay, so I'm just going to recreate project console application. I'm just going to call this console application 1. Let's go ahead and install this NuGet package again. Sorry about that. I totally forgot to not name them the same thing. Okay, so I've got this installed. I should still have my code here. Okay, this is better. There should really be a resolve all. you can see here, now that I have it, it's printed out the string, which is, this is awesome. And all it is I'm pulling it from a resource string. There's no trickery there. So now that you've seen that, I want to go ahead and install another package. I'm going to install this satellite demo .j-jp. I'm going to go ahead and install this. And you can see it depends on this package. Close. Go ahead and build this. Right. So you can see that it printed out the first line, which is what we saw before, but then there's this other demo. Okay? And what this is what I deemed as the Japanese translation of this. This is an awesome demo. Obviously it's not, but it doesn't really matter whether it's actually translated or not. But you can see here how I've changed the culture. I haven't had to do anything. I'm calling the same method both times. All I'm doing inside of this helper method, print message, is just simply calling, return a string. So I'm saying console.writeline of a resource string. And that resource string just is in both satellite assemblies. So NuGet now has the support for understanding NuGet assemblies, or satellite assemblies. So if we look here, inside of here, you can see that we went ahead and copied everything into the right place. Right? So we understood that this is a satellite assembly and it needed to be copied into this appropriate structure, which is this is the structure that's required. You kind of have a four-digit language here, and you dive down in underneath of it. So that's the satellite assemblies. Oh, let me go ahead and show you what a satellite assembly looks like if you want to create, or a satellite package, if you will, looks like. So I'm going to go up here, go to packages. So this is the main NuGet package. All it is a lib, a folder, and I have a DLL here. Nothing too fancy. And then for this one, you can see the only difference is I've specified a language. I've taken a dependency. This is what tells us is it's a dependence that it's a satellite package, is we need to take a dependency here. And then you can see underneath my lib folder, I have the language folder, and then I have the resources DLL that was created. Right? So that's a pretty handy way that you can go ahead and help localize your tools. And you could even go ahead and set this up such that you might not be localizing right now, but eventually at some stage you might. So this is really helpful to know about. Okay, so we're going to talk about a feature that we just added into O. And as far as I know, I don't know that it's really been talked about at any conference yet. So this is something brand new. You guys are kind of getting one of the first looks at it. So what I have here is just a solution. It has a console application that's created as 4.0 and a console application that's created as 4.5. So I'm actually going to open up something here. So I have a package that I've previously created called target demo. And what this package is, so previously we allowed target frameworks for DLLs. So you can say that this DLL needs 4.0, this DLL needs 4.5, right? That's always kind of been there. But we took it one step further. We allowed content to now have target frameworks. So we allowed all the different types. So we allowed lib folders, tools folders, and source files to, along with content, to have target framework versions. So we've kind of extended that. So you can see here I just have 4.0, and I'm dropping this demo.txt file in. It's a very simple file. So I'm just going to go ahead. I'm going to right-click on the solution level. I haven't really talked about that at all today, but there's also a solution level package manager, and this manages all the packages in that, or all the projects in that solution. So you can see here, I'm actually going to install this, and the only difference is when I click install, I'm going to be prompted in what projects I would like to install it in, and I'm actually going to install it into both, the same package into both. And then I'm going to come in here, and you can see this demo.txt says that this is 4.0, and then this one that's 4.5, you can see that this is 4.5. Okay, so I can easily change my content or everything in my package based on target framework. Right? So this is really helpful in case I want to deal with some styles or anything like that that might not work. Or I might want to use a different version of Java, of a JavaScript library, depending on what's available on the server. But what would logically come next is maybe I want to depend on different packages. So take, for instance, maybe I want to, in 4.5, we ship a system.NET HTTP client, but in 4.0 we don't. So maybe I want to use another library, another NuGet library in 4.0, but in 4.5 I just want you to use the native client, right? So I kind of want to shim it if you're in 4.0. We have support for that, and I'm just going to use NuGet package explorer to kind of demonstrate this. I can actually edit the metadata here. So what we're seeing here is this is the .nuspec file. Underneath the covers, this is what NuGet uses. It's a very simple NuGet spec file. You can manually create these yourself and then run NuGet pack against them. And in fact, when you run NuGet pack against the CS proj, we just manually, internally, we create one of these and then run our pack on it. So you can see all of these. And right now, I don't have any dependency nodes. But what I can do is I can take my snippets here, copy these in, and I'm going to go ahead and drop in some dependencies. Right? So normally what you would see is dependencies, and you would just have a dependency node underneath of it. You would have something like this underneath of it. Right? And you'd just have all your packages defined here. But what we've done is we've added the feature for groups. So you can kind of group your dependencies together. What this says is you add a group, and you say what the target framework you want it is, right? Or you define a not group. Okay, so this is a group without a target framework. So these are going to be applied if the target framework is 4.0. Otherwise, these are going to be applied, right? And there's no mixing and matching. It's kind of you define all the dependencies in each group. But it's an easy way to allow you to kind of use a polyfill or a shim when you're in a NuGet package. That's something that we previously didn't have that's brand new in 2.0. And I think it's something that's really exciting, and I think there's going to be some cool stuff that comes out of that. Okay, so you saw how we made code reuse easy, right? So how easy it was to install Elma and update Elma, update all of jQuery, all of those things. You saw how we made an ecosystem. So you saw how easy it was to create NuGet packages, and you saw some numbers around the amount of NuGet packages that we already have, and you saw that those numbers are even past what I had said. So you can see that ecosystem. And the last little cool part to all of this three-pronged approach is that we made it extensible. So we wanted to be able to allow people to extend things that we never even possibly imagined. Let's go ahead and it's demo time. So that was pretty quick slides, but basically, you know, we want it to be extensible. It's kind of the last key piece to making this a valid solution. Okay, so I'm going to go ahead. And one of the most common things we hear is that people want to host their own galleries, right? So you have NuGet.org, which is our gallery. But that's publicly facing. Anyone can download a package from it and install it. So you may want to install one on your local machine. Maybe you want to have it be, just something that you use locally. Maybe you want to share it inside your company only. Right, so you might want to put it behind the firewall so you can share all of your internal tools with each other, right? So we've allowed you to kind of host your own galleries, if you will. So there's kind of three ways that you can host your own galleries or feeds. We call them feeds. The first is, I'm going to go into the settings here. The first and easiest is that it's just a package, or it's just a folder on the file system, right? So you can see here, this is what I've been using a lot of. I just have /development/packages. This is just full of NuGet packages. And in fact, I have it right here. It's just a bunch of NupKegs sitting in a folder. Right? That's the easiest way to host your own feed, and you can point it to that. And you can use UNC share, so you can use a network share and share it across your company. That's absolutely the easiest way to do it. The next easiest way is I'm going to go ahead and create a project. I'm going to go to the web. I'm going to create an empty ASP.NET application. I'm going to make sure this is full for now. Okay. Okay, so nothing here. And then I'm just going to say install package NuGet.server. I'm going to go ahead and install this. So this is going to run through a bunch of stuff. There's a lot of dependencies that it actually needs to bring in. But basically what this is going to do is it's going to stand up a very, very small web server and a very, very small feed that you can actually use inside your company. So maybe if for whatever reason a folder wasn't good enough for you, so maybe you wanted to use Forms Auth instead of having to deal with Windows Auth, this is a way you could do that, right? Because you're creating a website. So you can use Forms Auth in this case. So if I just run this, we're going to be presented with a very simple page that says you're running this NuGet server. Here's what you need to do to add it. Here's how you push packages to it, right? So the other difference with this is how you get packages into this server. So you can simply copy them into this packages folder. Right now I have nothing there. So if I just open this up, and I'm going to go grab some packages from my packages. So I'm just going to grab this, I'm going to paste it here, right? And then the next thing I'm going to do is right. So then if I go to packages, right, you can now see that I have the Atom JS generator in there. Right? So it was very simple. The other way that you can get packages into this feed is to use the same mechanism that we did before, which is NuGet push. The difference between this and the main gallery is that NuGet push takes an API key. In this particular one, the API key is just set in the web config. So if I scroll, if I get rid of this, and I scroll down, it's here somewhere. Right? So right now I haven't set anything, right? But this is basically like a password. So I just set it and it's not user based, right? So it's one kind of one password allows you to push to this. Whereas the NuGet gallery, the public one, each person has a password. So this is a way that that you can upload packages as well. Last but not least is you can actually host your own version of the NuGet gallery. So this website that we have up here, so NuGet.org, is actually hosted on GitHub. So you can actually click on it, and you can view you can fork this, you can download your own copy of this and run your own gallery yourself. I wouldn't recommend doing this. This is kind of the most heavyweight solution of them all. But once again, if you need a full-fledged gallery for whatever reason, you're a big company. For instance, Microsoft, we have our own internal NuGet server. And for us, it was very important to run kind of a full-fledged gallery. So we actually have our own fork of the NuGet gallery that we use internally. And to speak to that, one of the plans that we're looking for future versions of NuGet is to increase the enterprise support in terms of being able to have your own enterprise NuGet server. That's things that we're looking at. And we've specifically run into some issues while trying to set up our own internal Microsoft server. So we want to address those for future versions of NuGet as well. So if you're running into any of that, don't worry. Help is on its way. That's kind of one way that it's extensible is it allows you to create your own feeds. You can have your own feeds. You don't have to use the Microsoft feed. So the next thing I want to kind of demo here is I'm just going to create an ASP.NET MVC4 application. And while it's creating, I want you to watch down here in the bottom left. You'll notice that it's saying adding a bunch of stuff. Now, what is this? So, like I said, since MVC3, NuGet has been required. MVC3 tools update, NuGet has been required. And it's been required because templates now ship with pre-installed NuGet packages. Right? So, I have done nothing except say file new project. If I just go ahead and manage NuGet packages right now, and click on the installed link, you're going to see that a bunch of new packages are already installed, right? And we did this because we want to be able to help support the NuGet community, and then also because you want to be able to update packages at your will, right? So we ship things like jQuery as a NuGet package. You can come in here and click on updates, and in fact, I'm pretty sure that the RC build, which is what I'm running, has an out-of-date jQuery, so I can quickly come in here and update it, right? So pre-installed NuGet packages is something that we support, and you can actually create those yourself. And if I come in to can just grab this and drag this over here. So how you could do that is if you've created your own VS template before. So if you've ever gone through any work, you're very familiar with what a VS template file is. But inside the VS template file, we have some information about the packages that we want to go ahead and install before. And we have all this information on our website, on our documentation. So if you didn't know, the NuGet Gallery has pretty good documentation. It's docs.nuget.org. This is a community-run documentation, and we have a ton of documentation on here that you can search through and understand, and then also that you can help contribute to. So there's some information about exactly what all this data does, but I want to point out that we've kind of allowed for these things to happen as well. So you can create your own templates and have pre-installed NuGet packages. And this is really handy if you constantly, say you work in enterprise, and you constantly install your company's data access layer into every project you create, and then your own style sheets into every project you create. You can make all of those things NuGet packages and create a template with those packages pre-installed. So that's a super handy feature. So with this, I really think that NuGet has made code reuse easy. It's we have made an ecosystem, and then we've made it extensible. I barely kind of scratched the surface of how extensible it is. There is some crazy tools out there that have taken NuGet to the extreme of allowing NuGet to actually install programs on your computer. It's a piece of software called Chocolaty. It's a play on the fact that NuGet is also a type of candy that allows you to install your own programs via a NuGet feed, right? So we really have made it extensible. And you know, I would have never thought of allowing people to be able to install programs off of a NuGet feed. So with that, we think, with those three things, we really think we have made development fun again. So I know you guys are, this is my big PowerPoint presentation skills, is being able to do the transition and slide that over. So development is fun again, in my opinion, now. So the other big news with NuGet is that it's open source. So when we work on NuGet, we work for the Outer Curve Foundation. It's completely open source. The NuGet Gallery is hosted on GitHub, and NuGet Core and all the extensions are hosted on CodePlex. You can find all the information about where that they are on docs.nuget.org. There's also a great document about how you can get started contributing both to the documentation and then also to the website and to the NuGet Gallery and to NuGet Core and the extensions. And we do accept pull requests, so we have brought in some features, and it's really good if you can get involved. It's really awesome. So lastly, I'm OsborneM on .com, so it's OsborneM.com, it's GitHub/OsborneM, Twitter.com/OsborneM, and CodePlex. I'm OsborneM, so I'm pretty much OsborneM and everything. With the last about 4 minutes, I'd like to open it up if anyone has any questions around NuGet. I'll give it a few minutes to let you guys type everything out. If not, I want to thank everyone for coming and also thank all the organizers of ASP Conf. It's been a great conference. It's a pleasure for me to present here. I'm really looking forward to all the rest of the exciting sessions tomorrow. So thank you.